All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are talking about injury updates and the Falcons' health status going into week one, changes to their depth chart, as well as talking about the matchup between the Falcons defense and the Seahawks offense.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, today's episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. You guys know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, your host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And we are going to be talking about the fact that the Falcons are pretty healthy going into week one, getting guys like Marlon Davidson and Matt Hennessy back. But maybe in the case of Hennessy, it's a little too late with his return from the knee injury that sort of he banged up at the end of August, because James Carpenter's listed atop the depth chart at the left guard position in the starting lineup. And we'll talk about some of the other notable takeaways from the Falcons' unofficial depth chart that they dropped on Monday. And then we'll sort of veer into our conversation about this upcoming week one matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. We do have a crossover later for you guys with the host of Locked On Seahawks, Corbin Smith, on Thursday of this week. But hopefully today I'll be focusing on the Falcons defense versus Seattle offense matchup. And then potentially tomorrow we can get into the Seattle defense versus the Falcons offensive matchup as well, to get you guys geared up before we jump into that Thursday crossover. But without further ado, let's sort of jump into our Locked On Falcons lead story and talk about the players returning from injury like Marlon Davidson and Matt Hennessy, as well as the changes atop the Falcons depth chart. Well, the Falcons got some good news on Monday with two rookies returning from injury in defensive tackle Marlon Davidson and offensive lineman Matt Hennessy. Davidson had missed time due to a knee strain and been out of the lineup since August 20th, and Hennessy left practice with a banged knee on August 28th. Both of those players were back in action on Monday, along with several other players that had missed time over the last couple of weeks, including safety Ricardo Allen with an ankle injury, Russell Gage, the wide receiver, and defensive end Dante Fowler also showed up on Monday without the knee brace that he had been sporting since August 27th, according to Falcons head coach Dan Quinn. Everybody was ready to go on Monday, but it does mean that things are looking very promising for when the Falcons have their full practice on Wednesday, that they will have mostly full participation, meaning that, as expected, the Falcons are probably going to be the healthiest that they are in the 2020 season entering this week one game. The only players that may have some questionable status this week as far as their health is concerned is defensive end Steven Means, who is currently on the reserve COVID-19 list that he was placed on back on August 29th. Reports from ESPN's Vaughn McClure also indicated that defensive end Charles Harris was not seen practicing on Monday either. With these returning players, Hennessy is probably the most notable, given that his absence might have cost him the starting left guard spot due to the unofficial depth chart being released by the team on Monday. It listed veteran and incumbent left guard James Carpenter as the starter at that position. ESPN reported that Carpenter did work with the starters during the absorbed portion of Monday's practice, and Carpenter and Hennessy have been guys that have been splitting reps at that left guard position throughout training camp this summer. But as the weeks went on throughout August, it seemed like Hennessy was the guy that was getting the brunt of the starting reps over Carpenter in practice. Then upon the release of veteran guard Jamon Brown on August 24th, it seemed very likely that Hennessy had all but sewn up the starting spot, and it was only a matter of time before the Falcons officially announced that he had. But his injury shortly thereafter might have cost him the precious reps and opportunities to solidify his spot atop the Falcons depth chart. Hennessy was drafted by the team in the third round of the 2020 draft, presumably as the heir apparent to starting center Alex Mack, who is entering the final year of his contract at age 34. But Hennessy quickly emerged as a candidate to start at left guard, a position that was particularly problematic for the Falcons throughout the 2019 season. The 31-year-old Carpenter did start 11 games at that position in 2019 during his first year with the Falcons, but struggled in 2019, and his season ended prematurely due to a concussion. His replacement in Wes Schweitzer over the final month of the season wound up signing with the Washington football team this offseason as a free agent. And it appeared that Carpenter is going to likely start this upcoming season in their week one matchup against the Seattle Seahawks at the left guard position, but likely will have a pretty short leash if he does not show marked improvement in his play in 2020 from his play in 2019. Thus, even if Hennessy doesn't start week one, we might be counting down the days until he gets an opportunity to showcase his skills at that left guard position. So there's your Locked On Falcons lead story, guys, and we'll get more into the depth chart coming up and looking at the individual components of that which stand out. But if you're looking for individual components that stand out for your car or truck, you guys should head over to rockauto.com. They have everything you're looking for, from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new floor mats. Get everything you need in just a few easy clicks, delivered directly to your door. And the rockauto.com catalog is unique and easy to navigate, as you can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, choose by brand, specification, and the prices that you prefer. And even if you don't know the name of the part that you're looking for, like I didn't know what's the thing that when I step on the brake pedal that turns off my brake light, I don't know the name of that part, but I was able to Google the serial number for that, type that in at therockauto.com, and be able to find that part for my make and model of my vehicle very easy, and purchase that at a great price. And those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low. Same for professionals, do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So the Falcons dropped their unofficial depth chart on Monday. And historically speaking, the Falcons, at least in the preseason, their depth charts aren't necessarily the most accurate, but they usually, by the time we get to week one, they usually get it right. And I don't think there's any reason to assume that this one that they dropped on Monday is too off the mark, plus because it meets the expectations on some of the things that we've been expecting from the Falcons depth chart, where I guess with the biggest surprise being that left guard position. But it also matches up with the various tidbits we've heard coming out of camp about some of these position battles as well. So no real surprises in that guard. I guess James Carpenter being the left guard number one is the biggest surprise, with Hennessy being his backup. But as we've already discussed, that's probably directly related to the fact that Hennessy's been out of the lineup and limited in practice for, you know, 10-ish days. The other standout takeaways on the depth chart is that they did have Brian Hill listed as the number two running back. But that seemed, again, not a major surprise given all the buzz that Hill had been generating. They also had Isaiah Oliver listed as the number one right cornerback, which, again, not a surprise given that after the first week or so of training camp, you know, you didn't hear a lot of conversation about Kendall Sheffield being the starter. You know, part of that was due to Sheffield missing some time early in camp as well. The other big major thing was that the Falcons had three safeties listed among their starters. You know how the Falcons format their depth chart where it's in the nickel, with the four nickel pass rushers being listed as the starters and two linebackers. And in the past, it was three corners as their starters, but now it's three safeties. So, you know, that's typically called the big nickel when you have a third safety B come in as your fifth defensive back, which is, you know, what the nickel defense is. The other thing, and we'll talk about the three safety looks later on the show when we get into the Seattle matchup. The other thing that stood out was Olamide Zaccheaus being listed as the kick returner and Brandon Powell being listed as a punt returner. And there had been talk, I remember Dan Quinn mentioning offhand that Powell and Chris Rowland were competing for the punt return jobs, and guys like Zaccheaus and Ito Smith were getting some reps on the kickoff stuff. And that was sort of, to me, an indicator that Brian Hill was likely going to win the number two running back spot, because, you know, the fact that the Falcons were giving Ito looks on the kickoff suggested to me that his spot as the RB2 was not secure, because traditionally the way the Falcons deploy their guys, if you're the RB2, you don't play special teams, right? That has been a guy that has long been considered, particularly in days when it was Tevin Coleman, as a de facto starter, like you would consider the number three wide receiver as a de facto starter. And so you didn't need to play special teams. That's basically the way that the Falcons operate, is if you're a starter, you don't play special teams. And so the fact that Ito Smith was getting return opportunities as a kick returner did to me indicate that the Falcons were probably looking at him being the third running back as opposed to the number two running back. So that's what was interesting to me. We will sort of move on from that, you know, from the depth chart, not a whole lot. You know, I'm not going to spend 15 minutes going through the ins and out of the Falcons depth chart. As I said, it's pretty much what we expected with that. But I do want to revisit a topic I did discuss on at the end of yesterday's episode, because I spent a lot of time thinking about that topic prior to recording yesterday's episode. And then after I recorded it, continued to think about it. And even this morning when I woke up, still had additional thoughts on it. And that, of course, is the battle between Kurt Benkert and Matt Schaub. And in thinking about it more, you know, I realized that it's less, you know, I think I framed it answering yesterday's question at the end of the episode on yesterday's Q&A episode, framed it as like the issue is with you guys, the fans, when it comes to that stuff. And I think really thinking about it a little bit more, I think it's more of a me issue than a you issue. I get why people like Kurt Benkert. I think the issue I'm having is not understanding how people can't compartmentalize when it comes to the, you know, QB2 battle. You know, for my money, the person who should be the QB2 is the guy who should be the best quarterback, which in my opinion is clearly Matt Schaub. And so for the thing I was struggling with is, no matter how much people like Kurt Benkert and how popular he is among our fan base, which he is exceedingly, you know, that doesn't make him the best quarterback. But one of the things I realize is like most fans don't really think that way. And I liken it similar to, you know, the way that I think is like, take a guy like Jamon Brown, who was a player that I liked, came on the podcast, obviously. So you go up a lot in my book if you're going to come on the podcast last summer, and, you know, does a lot of great off-field stuff as well. But it didn't necessarily affect my opinion of him as a player. You know, I was less, I guess I was little less willing to, you know, pick apart his game after he came on the podcast for that reason. But like, my opinion of him as a player didn't really change. And, you know, you go back to this summer where I was seemingly very pro Jamon Brown being in the mix for the starting left guard spot. But that wasn't necessarily because I liked him. It was more because I thought he was better than James Carpenter last year. I thought that he actually outperformed James Carpenter when they were competing for the left guard spot last year. So from my eyes, he should have been the starting left guard starting week one. And for me going into the summer, as you guys well know, you know, to me, the guy that should have been the starting left guard to me was Matt Gano. I thought that was the thing that had the most upside for the Falcons. The player that had the most upside, if he wound up starting at the left guard. But to me, Jamon Brown was like a plan B, that if Matt Gano didn't sort of grab the bull by the horns, I liked Jamon Brown as the plan B rather than someone like James Carpenter, due to the aforementioned issues I had with Carpenter's play last year. Couple that with the fact that I didn't really like Hennessy's projection as a guard when I was evaluating him coming out of Temple this past spring. So that was the thing for me. And so like, the thing I realized is like, that type of compartmentalization comes relatively easy for me, you know, putting my personal feelings of a player, you know, for the most part aside, to talk about the player as a, you know, football player and where they fit in with the team and what they should be able to do and all those various things. But I realize that's not the case for most fans. And I'm not meaning what I'm about to say in a condescending or meaning it in an arrogant way. I just know like my brain works differently than other fans, and some of the rah-rah stuff that I think gets most fans excited, you know, me being the cynical, jaded, bitter old man that I am, especially when it comes to, in particular, social media stuff, which I think is fueling a lot of the popularity that Kurt Benkert has, you know, that stuff tends to fall on deaf ears for me. So I have to sort of understand, you know, that the average fan, you know, typically eats that stuff up. And again, I'm not trying to be a jerk when I say those things. So that's the thing I sort of realized, in addition to, you know, my thoughts on the Benkert shop thing. But, you know, that cynical, jaded old man in me is like, it's going to be tough luck in 6 to 12 months when the Falcons decide not to just sort of hand the keys to Kurt Benkert as the number two to replace Matt Schaub next year. But we'll see how that turns out. So again, I'm rooting for Kurt Benkert, but I think you guys need to be prepared to be disappointed. But, you know, in talking about being prepared to be disappointed, I was going to try to use a segue to talk about the week one game. Prepare to be disappointed. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That was bad segue. I was making a joke. But we're going to continue today's Locked On Falcons by talking about this Falcons-Seahawks matchup, focusing on the Falcons defense with the Seahawks offense, and we'll get a little bit more into the three safety looks and what it could mean in terms of the matchups. But before we get there, I do want to plug the all new Locked On NFL podcast, where we have five new sets of hosts taking over for Brian Peacock and Matt Williamson. On Monday, you can check out Locked On Packers host Peter Bukowski. On Tuesday, you can check out Locked On Saints host Ross Jackson and Locked On Vikings host Luke Braun. Wednesday, you got Tony Wiggins of Locked On Jaguars and James Rapien of Locked On Bengals. Thursday, you have Chris Carter of Locked On Steelers, Ryan Tracy of Locked On Chiefs. And then on Friday, you got Keont Myers, a.k.a. your boy Q from Locked On Raiders, and Bo Brack from Locked On Cardinals. And if you guys are big fans of Brian Peacock and Matt Williamson, they're not going anywhere. They're still got a daily podcast. You can check out the Peacock and Williamson show and the brand new Locked On NFL podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you're listening to me right now. So let's talk about the Seahawks matchup. And again, today we'll focus on the Falcons offense. The Falcons defense versus the Seahawks offense. And then potentially tomorrow we'll probably focus a little bit more on the Falcons offense versus the Seahawks defense. So obviously last year the Falcons played the Seahawks, and we talked some of these things we talked about earlier in the summer, because someone asked me about, you know, previewing the week one matchup, and sort of we've spent like 10, 15 minutes on a previous Q&A earlier in August talking about this. So some of this stuff is a little bit of a rehash, but we'll go over it again because I know you guys don't listen to every episode. And, you know, I can barely remember what I talked about 3 weeks ago. So how could you guys? How could I expect that from you? So, you know, one of the things notable about that Seahawks matchup last year when it came to the Falcons defense is that the Falcons were primarily playing man coverage. I think they had like 3 out of 16 plays. They played zone, or 3 out of 16 pass plays. They played zone in the first half of that Seattle game last year. And, you know, the reason why they played so much man coverage was due to the fact that they were trying to simplify their defense, eliminate some of the mental errors, the blown coverages and miscommunications that they had been struggling with, especially in the previous weeks against Houston and in LA. That wasn't particularly effective because they had a couple of mental errors and breakdowns in that Seattle game. But my expectation is that they will primarily be going back to the tried and true zone defense, and whether that's going to be primarily the cover three, or I think we'll see quite a bit of cover three for reasons we'll get into later. But, you know, I think there's also a healthy percentage of cover two that we'll also see. You know, I think last year, they, at least on the three zone plays they had in the first half, I think they ran cover three on two of them and cover two on one of them, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, part of the reason why the Falcons are going to want to play zone is so that they can keep their eyes on Russell Wilson. And, you know, I think what's going to be interesting when we talk about that three safety look, what are some of the wrinkles that they're going to be able to bring if they show that, and how prevalent are they going to show that? You know, if you look back at last season, and according to Football Outsiders, the Falcons played nickel about 71% of their plays last year and dime on about 2% of their plays. And, you know, I know there's a lot of expectations for people and how the Falcons will deploy their three safety looks, with basically featuring Keanu Neal as more of a linebacker, and you'll have KZ and Allen playing some split safety stuff or cover two stuff. Or you might have one or both of those guys, you know, in the mix covering the slot receiver. You know, I don't have necessarily expectations on what the Falcons, I'm basically curious how the Falcons are going to utilize it. So, you know, I'm giving them a clean slate to see what they do. And, you know, one of the potential benefits of those three safety looks is it will be easier for them to disguise their coverages just because of Allen and Casey's ability to both play single high as well as drop down into the box or into the slot or whatever the case may be. So that'll be interesting to see how they use it. And, you know, there is no sort of, you know, part of the reason why I don't have expectations is because we've never really seen the Falcons deploy their three safety looks. It's something that they've reportedly wanted to do going into 2017. They dabbled with it a little bit, but they didn't really fully deploy it that season because DeMonte Casey wasn't necessarily ready for that, you know, significant role. And then in 2018, it seemed like they were moving towards that with Casey's sort of breakout. But then, of course, they had the injuries to Allen and Neal. And then, of course, last year, once again, the injuries to Neal as well. So, you know, we haven't really seen it. So this is seemingly something that's 3 years in the making. And the Falcons, you know, hopefully we'll see what it does against Seattle. You know, I think while the Seattle uses their offense and their formations and their personnel groupings, you know, one of the things I mentioned on the earlier episode was that Seattle has been a team that primarily runs out of their three wide receiver sets throughout the Russell Wilson era. But it does seem like based off of some of their offseason moves with the additions of several tight ends this offseason, drafting two tight ends, adding Greg Olsen, both of the tight ends, I think, are on the practice squad, or Parkinson might be injured. But, you know, it does seem like that's an indicator that the Seahawks want to use more 12 personnel, multi tight end sets, two tight ends, three tight end sets. And they were pretty successful when they did use those last year, according to Football Outsiders in their DVOA metrics. But we'll see what that, how they use that. And I think one of the benefits of the three safety look is that maybe it will be beneficial in trying to match up if they do deploy more of those two tight end sets. But it is interesting that late in the summer, the Seahawks did go out there, picked up Josh Gordon, signed Paul Richardson, that suggested that maybe they weren't necessarily looking to abandon their 11 personnel, those three wide receiver sets quite yet, but they cut Richardson and Gordon is suspended for this game. So that probably won't be a major factor in this game. Looking at the Seattle offensive line, they have a new starting center in Ethan Posick, beat out BJ Finney, who they picked up from the Steelers this offseason. Grady Jarrett has a history of working over Seattle interior offensive linemen, especially their centers. So I think that could be a favorable matchup for him. I've discussed in the past that Seattle has a question mark at the right tackle position in the new guy in Brandon Schell, who I suspect Dante Fowler will be facing quite a bit because I'm expecting Fowler to line up more on the left side of the defensive line, which will be the right side of the Seahawks offensive line. And, you know, it seems like the depth chart, at least the way that I perceive the depth chart and how they structured it, seems to confirm that. But we'll see about that. You also have a new starter on right guard for the Seattle and rookie Damian Lewis from LSU. And presumably that's going to be Marlon Davidson's side of the line. And when you go back to the Auburn LSU game last year, though, you know, Lewis and Davidson didn't lock horns too often in that game because at Auburn, Davidson usually lined up on the right side of the defensive line, which is the left side of LSU's offensive line. And he mostly went up against their left tackle, Sadiq Charles, in that game. Again, because you guys know Davidson primarily played defensive end for Auburn. But on the few opportunities he did go up against Lewis in that game, I thought Lewis kind of washed him. You know, Lewis is a very powerful run blocker and kind of was just mauling Davidson on a handful of those snaps. And, you know, if you guys recall from my scouting report of Marlon Davidson, I said he was a little light against the run. And I think that was that game reflected that. So we'll see if, you know, he fares better in the rematch, especially coming off the injury. Dwayne Brown, Mike Iupati, the left side of the Seattle offensive line. I'm assuming that's where to be where Tack and Grady take the bulk of their snaps. Obviously, it's not sort of fixed in terms of like, it's not like, oh, you line up every single time on one side of the defensive line. That's not how the Falcons usually roll with it. But I do think you'll see more Tack versus Dwayne Brown and Grady versus Iupati and whoever the center is, you know, because the center's usually going to, teams tend to slide their protections to the left. So the center is going to get the left guard a little bit more help against Grady Garrett. So we'll see how that goes. You know, on the outside, you have Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, their primary two wide receivers. We know that Keanu Neal has a very good history of matching up with Greg Olsen from their days, you know, going toe-to-toe in the NFC South. So I do think this game is a good litmus test to see sort of how much Keanu Neal has recovered from his injuries, because typically he kind of locks down and shuts down Greg Olsen. So if Greg Olsen has a solid to good game against Keanu Neal, when the Falcons do deploy their man coverage, which will probably be primarily on third downs, that's not necessarily a promising sign in terms of Keanu Neal's injury. So I think this is a good litmus test for him. You go to the Lockett matchup. Lockett gave Sheffield a lot of problems last year in that week 8 game. Lockett does spend about 69%, about 70% of his snaps in the slot last year. You look at DK Metcalf. He spent about 70% of his snaps lined up on the left side of the Seahawks offense, which means he'll probably be facing the Falcons right cornerback, which again is Isaiah Oliver. Oliver did a pretty decent job against Metcalf last time. You know, outside of the red zone, Metcalf was pretty quiet in that game, but he didn't really need to have a big game because of all the success that Seattle had on the ground. We'll get to that. And because of Lockett, you know, basically cooking Sheffield on a couple of key plays. But when you look at the two touchdowns that Metcalf did have, it was involving miscommunications specifically between Oliver and DeMonte Casey. You know, Oliver did get attacked early in that game going up against David Moore, who was Seattle's number three wide receiver last year, but gave up zero catches on the three targets that he had going up against Moore in man coverage. And, you know, that probably means that A.J. Terrell will presumably take on whoever that number three wide receiver. Again, it was Moore last year. Assuming it's going to be Philip Dorsett this year. Dorsett is mostly a vertical threat. I imagine the main concern in that matchup is going to be Wilson's ability to break contain and then lobbing up some deep throws to Dorsett down the field, more so than Dorsett sort of eating up Terrell on the underneath and intermediate stuff. You know, I think the big factor for the Falcons in this game is going to be stopping the run, given how much the Seahawks offense is predicated on, you know, hashtag establishing the run. You know, so I think really when we look at the keys to the game, I don't think it's rocket science. You got to control the line of scrimmage. You got to stop the run. You got to get Seattle into some third and longs. You got to get pressure on Wilson in those instances and don't let his ability and his creativity when it comes to creating those plays off structure prevent you from getting off the field on those third downs and in those opportunities in passing downs. You look at the third down situation, Seattle last season was 27th in the NFL in terms of converting third and eight and longer last year. You know, you go back to that Falcons Seattle game, they were only one of six on third downs in those third and long situations, two of three in the other third down situations, most of which I believe all of which were run plays. And focusing on the run, this will be the last part we'll talk about today, which is going to be critical for the Falcons' success. Chris Carson had 14 first half runs and he had a success rate of 100%. On all 14 of those runs in the first half last year against the Falcons. Rashad Penny had a success rate of 80% on his five first half runs. So the Seahawks just pounded the ball down the Atlanta's throat last year. And I think, you know, the Falcons' reliance on man coverage was a contributing factor to their struggles against the run. That's one of the trends that you saw last year is the Falcons struggled in the second half of the season stopping the run because they were so much more reliant on man coverage. You saw that in the first half of the season as well, where in the games where they were leaning heavily on their man coverage, they tended to struggle against the run. And that's in part due to the fact that when you play man coverage, because the corners and safeties are so much keying on what the wide receivers and the tight ends and the running backs, et cetera, are doing, those guys aren't keying on their runs and they're keying on their coverage assignments. And so it basically, you know, means that the guys in the box, the linebackers are sort of tasked with stopping the run. And if you get pushed around, you know, and as we've talked about before, you get a hat on a hat, you know, with the blockers, with six blockers, seven blockers, whatever it is, you know, that's going to be a problem for you when it comes to stopping the run. I think that was a contributing factor for the Falcons. So again, that goes back to why I think the Falcons will probably play a lot more zone this year, because typically everybody's, you know, all 11 guys are looking at the ball when you play zone. And so therefore you tend to be a little bit stouter against the run on those early downs. So you'll probably see, and as I've explained before, cover three, typically because you have that strong safety dropping down in the box, you typically can get a little bit more force against the run, as that strong safety can often be, you know, depending on if you're a nickel or whatever, it can be that seventh or eighth man against the run, which cover two, when you have those split safeties, both of those guys are sort of bailing, and particularly if you're going to play Tampa too, with the middle linebackers bailing down the middle of the field as well. So that's why I kind of expect the Falcons to play a lot more cover three, at least on early downs. The question is going to be, you know, what do the Falcons do on third downs? Do they go to their man coverage looks? Do they look to play a lot more cover two and disguise their coverages? Or, you know, do they show cover two and then go to cover three? That's going to be an interesting wrinkle to see how it goes. So, you know, obviously we don't have a lot of expectations because we didn't get to see the preseason this year. So I'm very eager to see what the Falcons do and sort of the chess match, so to speak, the strategy aspect of, you know, this defense going up against the Seattle offense. It's not a bad matchup. You know, I think the Falcons certainly have the ability to take care of business. They certainly have the talent to do so. We just got to see it, you know? And so you just need all those components working together. Again, going back to those keys, controlling line of scrimmage, getting pressure on the quarterback, stopping the run, all those various things, you know, the sort of simple things that everybody says about football. You know, football's not overly complicated. Oftentimes it's pretty simple, you know, but it doesn't mean it's easy, right? So we'll see how that goes for the Falcons defense. And then we will probably turn our attention to the Falcons offense going up against the Seattle defense and probably talk a lot about Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner and Jerron Reed on tomorrow's episode. And if you guys have any questions or concerns or any type of feedback that you want to provide to me, of course, you can do so via Twitter on at Lockdown Falcons or Facebook. Send that to Lockdown Falcons. That's the name of the page there. Or you can send an email to lockdownfalcons@mail.com and we'll see what we can do with that feedback or those questions to answer on future episodes. We'll probably, again, tomorrow we'll probably focus on that flip the matchup. Thursday will be the crossover episode and Friday we'll probably do a Q&A. But we can also answer questions on tomorrow's episode. You know, we'll probably talk a little bit more about whatever news comes up for the Falcons then. But yeah, we can certainly answer some questions on tomorrow's episode if you guys send those in through those, you know, Twitter, Facebook, or email. So, you know, let me know. And that's it, guys. Definitely check out rockauto.com. And, you know, if you do buy something, you know, make sure you write Lockdown in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And, you know, if you do use Rock Auto, go ahead, tag me. You use any of our sponsors, go ahead and tag me and let me know, you know, that rockauto.com or NFL Game Pass or Built Bar, you know, hooked you up this week. So definitely check those sites out. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons. Your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.